ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily Podcast with Ben Cameron and the former Hawthorn and Carlton player, AFLW coach Daniel Harford. We are here at the MCG and we have just witnessed a Stephen King-authored horror story for Carlton. A 66-point turnaround in this game as Melbourne honoured Max Gawn in the way they would love to in Game 250. Maybe the best ruckman we've ever seen, Daniel Harford. That was a day at the footy that has seen Carlton fans throwing their scarves into toilets. They were filing up the aisles with 4 minutes to go.
Yep.
And they have left asking, why on earth has this happened again?
It's a good summary. I couldn't quite believe what was happening in that second half, the way they just stopped and the way the Melbourne were able to overpower them. Even though it was a Big Maxi 250 and Tom McDonald as well, the Blues have had their fans here, 67,000 people in the building, and giving them good love too when they were up and about in the first half. There was a really good energy in this stadium for the boys wearing navy, but coming out after halftime, and probably leading into that in fairness, 10 minutes leading into halftime, they lost their ascendancy in the contest, still had the lead, but lost their ascendancy in Melbourne, sniffed it, and knew that the second halves were an issue, and it played out exactly as it's played out before. And Carlton fans, despite some being scarfless with it in the toilet, the MCC toilets, would be sitting there going, how the hell does this happen once again?
You've shown me a photo that someone has sent to you with that scarf draped into the toilet.
Yep.
So that is something. That is how Carlton fans are feeling. Corbin Middlemass always says that when the house is on fire at Carlton, it's hotter than anywhere else. So you also picked just the 10 minutes leading into halftime as part of the broadcast. You said here, if I'm Michael Voss, I'm really happy, but I'm a little bit concerned about the last 10 minutes before halftime. They booted the first 7 goals of the game. So 40 seconds into the second term, Elijah Holland's goals, it's 7-2-44, plays one behind at that point in time. 43 points. From there, Melbourne chip away at the lead. They get it down to 6 points early in the fourth. And then all of a sudden, they boot the last 7 goals of the game to just run over the top of them. And the mental frailties that we have seen from Carlton over and over again reappear.
Well, that's right. That's the problem. They reappear. They continue to reappear. And so the players aren't able to learn because they're not getting the reward, for a positive reward for being able to stay in the game or maintain the momentum or halt the momentum of an opposition team. They're not getting the positive rewards and outcomes on that. So they start to get a bit jittery about the whole system. What am I supposed to be doing here? What are we supposed to be doing here? Because history says we haven't got this right. And I'm not sure what my role is anymore. I don't know what that entails in this scenario. How do we get this game back on terms? Mel would have been able to flip it back on terms. What's our mechanism now? What's our lever to pull, or levers, not Jake, levers to pull to get this thing back on track? They seemingly are wanting answers to those, but no one seems to... Sorry, they're the questions they're asking, but no one's giving them the answers they need.
So everyone's had a crack at trying to solve why it happens. What's your reasoning?
I reckon Bob Murphy had a really good summation of what was going on throughout the game, where he said, and we could see it. It was clear as day. When Carlton, in that first half, when they were playing really good footy and they set the game alight with those first 7 goals, they were electric with their attack. But also their defence, their intensity and urgency to defend and get the ball back was off the charts. Now, difficult to maintain in modern footy, the way the game's played, to do that for 4 quarters. But they were electric. It was so good to see. And they got really good reward for it. But as soon as they started to attack slow, they defended slow. And that creates opportunities for the opposition once they get their hands on the footy, because you'll find a hole here, you'll find a hole there. That'll create a leapfrog effect. Someone will find some space on the back of that. You'll draw that slow defender in. Next possession down the chain is going to be a free player. And that started to really creep into the game. And Melbourne exploited that Carlton deficiency and were able to hit the scoreboard on the back of it the second half, kicking 11 goals in the last 11 of the last 13 goals. Last 7 in the game. Like, that's a total shutdown from Carlton's perspective.
So Max Gawn was enormous in the second half in his milestone game, and Cozzy Pickett was right there with him, quiet in the first half, but certainly stood up in the second half and finished with 33 disposals, 1 goal, 2, 10 score involvements, 10 inside 50s. You had a great stat half, or you have a great stat.
Yep.
For Carlton in second halves this year.
It's a bit worrying. I brought this into the game in preparation for it, hoping not to use it, but turns out I needed to. So second halves this year, 6 goals for them in the opening round game against Sydney, to 18 goals from Sydney in that second half of the first game. One goal against Richmond, four goals to Richmond in that second half of that game. They just snuck over the line. But alarm bells still should have been ringing for Michael Vossenko.
Could have been a lot more in that game if Tom Lynch had brought his kicking boots.
Absolutely. Like, it was 4 points gone begging for the Tigers that game. And then they've kicked four goals today in the second half, and Melbourne have kicked 14. So add that up. In second halves in 2026 in three games, they've kicked 11 goals. Their opponents have kicked 36. That's a 25-goal difference. That's 150 points in three. That's averaging 50 points a game. Thereabouts. I haven't got the full points.
Minus 50 in second halves, basically.
Every week.
Yeah.
That's a problem. And so that's not a one-off, clearly. Carlton fans know this better than anyone. That's not a one-off. That's not a blip. This is now a pattern. This has been a pattern for 18 months. So there's something significantly wrong in their system, but also their belief in the role.
So immediately you look at the leaders there. So Michael Voss is the coach of the team. Then you look at the leadership group, and Patrick Cripps is the on-field leader.
Yep.
How do you apportion the blame?
Everyone in leadership, particularly in the football department, needs to take a good chunk of this. Now, I think the coaching staff needs to wear most of it, because they're the ones that are building the system, building the belief, building the trust through repetition of training, through practicing games, through experiences out here in games for points. They're the ones that build that. So the majority of this has to go to all the coaching staff. Now, we often focus on the head coach. They're the ones that we sort of single out more often than not. But this is a panel. Mm. This is the coaching panel. And also the footy manager would have a role in this as well. So they are the ones that really need to own this. But the guys on field should be able to understand the state of play, because they've got the experience to do it. Cripps has been around a long time. Wiedering's been around a long time. Walsh now is 150 games in. McKay, he's been playing for long enough. They've got enough soldiers. Even guys like McGovern, who've been around, played a lot of footy. They've got a lot of guys. Zach Williams played a lot of footy, should know the scenarios and what to do in those scenarios. But they aren't able to, for whatever reason, they aren't able to harness that group at that time and get them back on keel. They just see totally off kilter. When the game becomes a stressful environment out there on the field, it's fascinating to watch in real time. I can't put my, it has to be role, psychology, belief in your system, in your structure, in your people. That's what it has to be, in my view. Now, I might be wrong, but seeing it often enough suggests that that's got to be what it is.
It feels like it's the 6 inches between their ears at the moment for Carlton. Are the happiest people today, Essendon? They might have moved off the back page.
You betcha they are.
Carlton have taken that place. It would be remiss of us to move on without mentioning Max Gawn, who was well held by Mark Pittenett in the first half. And you were right across a plan by Carlton to take him well forward so that he couldn't sit a kick behind the ball for Max Gawn. But we're not looking at today or the first half or his second half, in which he was enormous. We're looking at the totality of this Max Gawn career. And he sits right amongst the ruck goats, doesn't he? Polly Farmer, John Nicholls, Simon Madden, Peter Moore, who's a dual Brownlow medalist, Jim Steins, who won one, Dean Cox in the early 2000s. Where does he rank, half?
Don't forget my mate, Paul Salmon. Very, very fine, big man, yeah. Big fish. What a great ruckman he was, what he could have been, had he been there all through his career. Anyway, we're being sidetracked. Oh, look, he's the modern great. Mm. Isn't he? He's the modern great. And we've talked about him, I think last week or the week before, we talked about him being the king of the last quarter. And he had a huge impact again today in the last quarter. There's not too many that you would want. In the last 15 years of footy, there's not too many other guys that play that role that you would pick before him. In fact, I don't think there's any. Mm. So he's the modern day great.
Yep.
Where that ranks him all time, different generations, different conversations, different opinions on that sort of stuff. But he's the modern day great, and he's been an amazing player. Because he's not just a big blonde ruckman that gets in the way. He's an athletic animal. He's an aerobic beast. Like, the way he covers the ground, he crashes packs. He goes forward and tries to kick goals. Sometimes they go sideways like they did today. He gets back and helps. He's a link-up player at times. Like, he's just a totally unusual athlete for a guy of his size. And he's got, the thing I most admire about him is he's got that competitive desire and want to win every single moment of the game. Mm. Some guys have got that. There's a lot of great players out in the AFL at the moment. Not everyone has that. They're just great players. They just get the game and they just play through instinct. But Max has, in my view, he's got a streak of competitiveness that is pretty rare.
He's got that mongrel in him, doesn't he? And he's such a good bloke off the ground. I mean, I didn't see really much of Steins. I mean, I was too young for that. Moore, Madden, Nicholls or Farmer. I've really seen Cox and Gawn. And I love Dean Cox, and he was brilliant in that West Coast midfield, but I think I've got Gawn just ahead of him. In the overall comparisons, I mean, people will often point to Simon Madden, who did so much forward of the ball, kicking 575 goals in
pretty handy player,
378 games as well. But, yeah, he's a walk-up Hall of Famer. Is he a legend? Because I think you can only really have two legends per sort of decade or so. So that'll be a fine line. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and we are nitpicking, but these are the pub conversations we love to have.
Yeah, he'll certainly be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
as you say, he's a walk up star for that. Eight time All Australian is enough to get him in that door. Might be nine. It might be all time leader at the end of the season, the way things are going.
A man who's been coming for his throne in recent years, but not quite got there yet, is Tristan Sherry, who had a moment that he would certainly want to forget. He's been referred directly to the tribunal. If you didn't witness it, probably if you've been living under a rock, he wiped blood from his nose and wiped it on the cheek of Andy McGrath.
Yep.
What was your immediate reaction to this, Half?
My immediate reaction was he didn't just do that, did he?
Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought at the time. He didn't just do that, did he? And then you see it again, and they start talking about it, and they get the replays and the photos, and you see that's exactly what he did.
Mm.
Now, we were talking through the call of the Melbourne Carlton game about what had led to that point. And there was an accusation from the Essendon players that he had taken a dive, and Tristan was showing them, justifying, I've got blood on my nose, mate. I didn't take a dive. I got whacked in the schnoz. But to get from that point to, I'm going to wipe that and show you the blood on my fingers, and then I'm going to put it on your face. I don't know how that, I don't know where those two dots connect. I don't know how that ever gets to a connection. I just cannot believe it happened, to be honest with you.
Mm.
And he will be sitting there going, what the hell have I done? A bit like we talked about last week with our man over in the West, Voss, the pat on the head and the crying and the stupid stuff. It's a thing that will never happen again in the game, in my view, because the tribunal will come down fairly hard on him.
What do you think? How many weeks?
And quite rightly. I'd be comfortable with a month.
Yeah, I think around the 3 months.
I think it's a horrible thing to do. It's totally unacceptable.
Yeah.
It's a horrible thing to do. Think about it for a second. Just break it down into what it is. Wiping your blood on someone else's face.
Yeah. It's pretty gross.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Let alone grotesque.
Yeah.
I think Bob used the grotesque today. Grotesque, which is a good phrase for it too. But it's totally unacceptable.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we're going to, if spitting, and it's bodily fluid stuff we're talking, so spitting is so frowned upon, and you would get, I reckon you'd get three or four for spitting these days, wouldn't you?
Mm.
If you're going to consciously choose to wipe your blood on someone else's face, not their jumper, their face, then I think you earn a pretty good stint on the sidelines. I'd be more than comfortable with a month.
Yeah, I think it's sort of in that 3 to 4 range. So we'll see what the tribunal...
Which is so sad for the Kangaroos.
Yeah.
Like, they're 2 from 3. They've got Carlton next week on Good Friday. It's a game they absolutely could win and go 3 from 4. But without Tristan, it makes it that much more difficult.
It's even very different to... And hearing Cameron Ling speak about his instance with Nathan Buckley in the early 2000s. So Buckley had blood...
Yep.
Wiped it on Cameron Ling's jumper to basically say, look, if I've got to go off with the blood rule, he's got blood too. He's coming with me. This is very different to that. Wiping it on someone's face as opposed to their jumper. That was sort of Bucks almost thinking, well, maybe I can outsmart the system here.
Yeah, so, well, I reckon that's exactly what happened. This time had elapsed and he'd made a conscious decision to do this. And for the life of me, I can't work out how to get to that point. And he should pay a significant price for that. Because as we discussed through the call, this isn't something that we can allow to just be a 1 or 2 week minor penalty, as much for what it does, what it says to every other footballer in the country, man, woman, boy, girl, any level, we're not tolerating this.
No.
Absolutely unacceptable.
Let's hustle through a few here. West Coast Eagles fans will want us to
give
them their flowers.
And so they should.
So we should.
Yeah,
I mean, Andrew McQualter had the most unenviable job in football when he took over the sorry West Coast Eagles, and they are now 2-1. They have a winning record, have won back-to-back games. They came from 29 points down to upset Port Adelaide.
Yep.
And you can see it half. Not all the time, relatively infrequently, but you can see signs in how they move the ball, how they defend, what they are trying to do.
I watched the first half from home before I got in the car to come to the MCG. And despite the fact that Port kicked the first whatever it was, you could fit, and a quarter time was still 25 points or something.
Yeah, 9:30 a.m. start on the West Coast body clock might have contributed to that.
That's Fruit Loops and footy sort
of
stuff,
it is,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
What a great competition that'll be. Fruit Loops and footy. I saw that, I thought, okay. But then the Eagles kicked the last two of, might have been the quarter or the half, can't remember. But they looked okay. They started to get the game back on terms, a bit like what happened here. Bit like what happened in leading
games were actually somewhat
similar, yeah,
in different ways.
Yep, yeah, I agree. So
not as big a margin, but
you could see that West Coast started to get the game back on terms, got some rewards and positive outcomes on the back of that, and they took that into halftime and came out and had a really strong third quarter, 4-1, which sort of gave them the chance to win the game. Now they nearly coughed it up late too, just by the way, nearly vomited all over themselves. But they didn't. They held on and they got the points. Which
good mark from Jobe Shanahan too.
Yeah, he's becoming a good player. A moment's player. Big Jobe Shanahan, I like him. So really good for Andrew McWalter and the whole footy club. Like, we've talked about the Kangaroos for many, many months and years in the last couple of AFL seasons for the challenges they've faced and the lack of success. West Coast have been a debacle in terms of success. So to get to a position where, and it's only 3 weeks in, and they've played teams around them largely, to win those games, they've still got the lick of the ice cream. And what that does for belief, we talked about this before with Carlton, and confidence and belief in their role, but also their capacity to play at the level and be competitive week in, week out, is enormous. They will get huge benefits from this, more so than in most other teams when they have back-to-back wins that have been challenged. This is a really strong performance from them. And I asked some questions about Port Adelaide too, just by the way.
Yeah, that I know that people at Port Adelaide thought they were a real chance of starting the season with four wins. And they had a very soft start to the year with North Melbourne into Essendon, into West Coast, into Richmond. And all of a sudden, they find themselves 1-2. And that's a bit of a pickle for them. I was a little worried when Andrew McWalter said at the start of the season, hopefully you'll see our percentage improve. I thought, oh, he's not expecting them to win too many. But to have meatloafed the start to the season, they are going well. The AFL Grand Final half, that was the other big news on Sunday, announced today, and this is something the AFL haven't done. They've generally let it flap in the breeze and be debated all year and then announced in an August commission meeting that it will remain a day game. They've said the AFL Grand Final will remain a 2:30 start for 2026 and 2027. You like it, don't you?
Well, I think 2:30, and I know our friends over in the West may have issues with this and would prefer a 5:30 type twilight, give us 2:30 back home sort of scenario. I've always thought that the rhythm of Grand Final day works at 2:30.
Yeah.
3 o'clock if you want to stretch it for half an hour. That's the rhythm of it works beautifully. You get your chance to get up in the morning, have your brekkie little party going, roll through lunch, build up to the moment, have 3 or 4 hours of build up, which is great if you're at the MCG, if you've ever been lucky enough to be at the MCG for Grand Final day, it's such a great vibe, such a great buzz. 3 or 4 hours into 2 o'clock, 2:30, throw the ball up. I was going to say bounce the ball. Yep. Throw the ball up for the start of the game.
First time that'll happen this year.
Yes, true. Play the game, win, lose. You're done by six-ish.
Yep.
Six-ish, and then you've got all night to commiserate or celebrate or just reflect upon the year. If you're just a neutral watching the game, just reflect upon the year and just absorb footy for that moment. I just think the flow of Grand Final day works so beautifully at 2:30 or thereabouts that time. If you pushed it back, I think pushing things too far back into the night in terms of celebrations and fan engagement, fan involvement in those things.
It gets late quick on Grand Final night.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And if imagine if we started at 5 o'clock or 4:30, and we didn't finish till 8 o'clock, and presentations aren't till 9 o'clock.
Yeah, by the time
you get out here, it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah, by the time the team does the lap of honour, I've done the winning rooms the last few grand finals. Great place to be. I'm down there slapping backs and celebrating half. But
they'd be high-fiving you.
Yeah, by the time they've done their lap of honour, even get down into the rooms, we do the rooms, we're not off air until 7:30, 8 o'clock on grand final night. So it gets late really fast.
Yeah, because you don't want to rush that.
Yeah.
That's the moment you've dreamt your whole and worked your whole life for. So you don't want to rush that on the players or the clubs. Let them have that moment. So we shouldn't be able to interrupt that through you know, wanting to have darkness so we can get fireworks from a half-time or post-game display. So I think it's a great call. You're right, but I'm interested in the timing of it. Seemingly it got out and there was a few rumours buzzing around. So somebody's opened the lid somewhere and someone's got a whiff of it. And maybe that's why, because it's been great fodder for the competition. Colin Minch's radio minutes, or TV minutes in the last decade or so for for all the way up until August, really, as you said. So the fact that it's come out so early, I think it gives footy fans a sense that finally they're listening to us, because I think there has been a sense that headquarters doesn't really care about the footy fan.
So I want to pick up on that point. So Andrew Dillon and Craig Drummond spoke on the concourse of the MCG today, and basically they said the reason for this is to give fans certainty in very uncertain times in the world. I know that there was a bit of a view around the media press pack and just speaking to people out the back here at the MCG today that maybe this was to garner some goodwill, given there's been some negative press. And I did notice that that question was asked of Andrew Dillon at the press conference, and I wouldn't say he denied it. He sort of talked around it, and he didn't really deny that maybe this was just to have a little bit of goodwill.
Well, normally there's a couple of wins for headquarters throughout the course of a year or an off-season. There's a couple of little wins for headquarters. I can't recall any leading into this year.
Yep.
Be it the rules, be it the timing of the season, be it the fixturing.
The rules have been okay.
But not to the public. The footy public have had a gutful of law changes, and they don't want to see too many more. So I think PR-wise, they've had a disastrous 6 months. So sometimes I'm a bit cynical, Penny, but I'd have no doubt that this is a PR win. This is, how can we get a little win? We're not going to change it anyway, so let's just tell them. Let's just keep it at 2:30. We'll just tell them, rather than drag it out and let the innuendo build and hate us even more. Let's just tell them. And you know what else we'll do? We'll tell them we've got an all-time favourite coming to help out.
Yeah, Kylie. Do you like Kylie Minogue?
Yeah, she was my first ever concert.
I thought you were going to say my first ever crush.
No, well, she might have been that too. No, she wasn't my first ever crush. But she was my first ever concert.
Kylie Minogue.
At the Glass House.
What's the Glass
House? At the Glass House in Melbourne. Collingwood's home ground. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like every year they...
She was certainly my first concert.
I feel like every year it's like, oh, the AFL's trying to get Kylie, and then we never get Kylie. This year we've got Kylie.
It's another PR win.
Remember when Robbie Williams performed? There were all of these rumours that Kylie was going to show up. She didn't.
No, Delta did, though. That was okay.
Yeah, Delta. Yeah, I'm a big Delta
fan. We're
happy
Delta fans, too. So Kylie's a win.
Yep.
2:30's a win. Sell it. Let's push that for a bit. Let's get some love into the building just for a little bit, because they haven't had many moments of that throughout this last 6 months.
Now, there was other breaking news today. Collingwood putting out a statement saying, attributed to Charlie Gardner, their GM of football, saying scans yesterday showed that Darcy Moore has sustained a low-grade hamstring strain along with an inflamed bursa behind his knee, which is expected to keep him out for the next 3 to 4 weeks. This was bizarre on Friday night. It looked like he'd done a hammy. He came back on. He couldn't kick in the rooms. He couldn't kick on the ground. It looked like there was an issue. But everyone was saying, well, if he's done a hammy, they wouldn't put him back out there. The question now is, can he play consistent football?
Well, why would you put him in that position in the first place? This is a guy who's clearly had soft tissue challenges in the last little while. He's not getting any younger. And he's clearly exhibiting signs of discomfort, unrest, soreness in that part of his body. I just thought the whole thing was bizarre. Now, I'm not the high-performance guy at Collingwood. I'm not the coach at Collingwood. And they will know much more than I will. So I'm speaking from a largely uneducated perspective. But I think most people would have been watching that unfold on Friday night thinking, why would they do that? Why would they push him back out there? Clearly he's not right. He can't kick. We saw the vision in the rooms. He can't kick the ball without any duress. And you're going to get him to go out there and play one of the most dynamic sports on the planet with a dodgy hamstring at his age with his history. It just didn't make any sense. It was just totally bizarre. And now he's got a month on the sidelines. I just thought it was a really unusual situation. Was it poorly handled? I don't know. I don't know enough about the specific situation. But it looks to me like to be poorly handled.
Yeah. Nick Dacos was enormous in that game again. Highest ever rated third quarter for him. 6 clearances for the game, 12 inside 50s. And I found it fascinating. He said post-game on Fox Footy that Scott Pendlebury led a masterclass during the week on mid-forward connection. And we asked Craig McRae about that on AFL Saturday. And this is what he said. And I want to pick up on this with you in a moment, Half.
It was so good. It was so good, Corbin. We train and he comes into the coaches and says, can you get that footage up of that drill? I just need to have a look at it. And grabs Tyson Goldsack and goes over the footage. And then we do an opposition where we look at opportunities and whatever. And he just gets up and presents. And I went, oh. I sat there just in awe. I was in awe of this incredible, player and role model. And he just spoke about, it's subtle. It's subtle stuff, but it was important to us. What a fortunate position we're in when we have players like him that just lead and promote where we need to be. And he's got an aura. There's no doubt he's got an aura. And I think I'm just biding time until he's ready to coach the Collingwood Footy Club.
So what I want to pick up out of that half with you is not so much what Craig McRae says about Scott Pendlebury, but modern leadership. You don't have to have every answer to be a senior coach. I feel like that's what we used to think. The CEO or the senior coach of any organisation would have the answer. That's not modern leadership. It is, you can be vulnerable. You can, other people can know certain aspects better than you. And that's what Craig McRae, I think, does better than anybody else. And you've been a coach, you would have lived it.
Yeah, well, the best leaders in any facet of life, any stream of life, have the best people around them. And empower them to give their information, teach their colleagues, their underlings, whatever you want to call them, teach them as well. Because you're right. In the old days, the coach had to know everything, had to have the answers to everything. But that's changed and so far away from what modern leadership is, especially in sports, but business and as much as anything else. Empower the people around you. Surround yourself with great people who know stuff that you don't need to know, but you can facilitate and help them send that to the colleagues and the staff or the teammates or players, whatever it is in a footy sense, and let them go to work. You know, and sit back and watch it and let it happen and be so thankful that you don't have to know everything and you've got people that are capable of sharing their wisdom with your people. It's a very good insight into the modern landscape of sport, but I reckon it's a more of an insight in the modern leadership across the world, to be honest with you. They're doing a little bit of homework on that in the last couple of years. That's what it is. You don't have to know everything.
No.
Those days are gone.
We probably let Essendon off the hook. We got so caught up in the Tristan Sherry debate, but North able to win that 10-game losing streak against Essendon. A 16th consecutive loss for the Dons. 17 is the club record. They're zipping three. Brad Scott said, it would make my life a lot easier to bring in experienced players, but I'm not in it for the easy. I want to build a platform for this club for success, not the quick fix. You look at their fixture and what Essendon have coming up, they could easily fall to zip and 10. So they've got the Western Bulldogs, Melbourne, Gold Coast, Collingwood, Brisbane, GWS, Fremantle.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
But, in fairness, if you're a bad team,
yeah,
there's not too many
no
ticks in the box.
Those are really bad. That might be the best 6, 7, 8 teams coming up.
Yeah, if you're a bad team, most teams are a challenge. That's the way it sort of works. But that is a problem. And the thing I was disappointed about last week with Essendon was there's a lot of talking that happened after the Port Adelaide game about demoralised and leadership and selfish and all that sort of stuff. And then three changes were made and they're inexperienced players.
Yeah.
I thought there was going to be a real statement, not a statement for statement's fact.
Did there have to be?
But the statement made to say, well, I've gone out on a limb. I've told the public that we are largely, there's a portion of our group that is a selfish portion. And whatever drives that, I haven't got to the bottom to yet because I haven't been able to change it, but I'm not going to let you play. And I don't know that the guys that missed were the guys he was talking about. So that's what upset me a little bit during the week. If I was a Bombers fan, I'd be annoyed by that.
I'm not a Bombers fan. I was annoyed by that because I expected it. The only thing was, I think the VFL side lost by 80 points. So he probably calmed down and went, who have I got?
They won this week.
Yeah, they did. They did. They beat North.
They beat North this week. So there's something that went right for the Bombers across the weekend. But yeah, they're under significant pressure. They've got their list build wrong. Like, there's a whole lot of problems. This isn't just a Brad Scott problem.
No.
Let's be really clear about that. There's a whole lot of problems going on at Essendon, have been for the last couple of years.
Let's hustle a little bit here, half. So Fremantle defeated Richmond by 60 points. Josh Tracy was the man in this game. The other story was Fremantle's inaccuracy, 25 behinds, the equal most by a Fremantle team. But he was marking absolutely everything. David King said, Josh Tracy might be the cleanest hands I've seen since Carey. So 14 targets inside 50. He took 6 marks. King also said he's the best power forward in the competition. Where does he rank for you?
He's on the podium, I think.
Yep.
I think he's on the podium because he's exactly that. He's a power forward. Some guys are key forwards and they play that role. Some guys are leading forwards and they're forward targets.
Yep.
But he's a power forward.
Like Taylor Walker kind of plays like a half forward flanker.
Yep.
As a big guy.
Yep.
And that's not a dig
it's not
Taylor,
a slide on Taylor Walker, no, it's just the way it is.
Whereas this is a power forward.
Yeah, he's a power forward. 12 marks for the day, 4 goals, 3, 8 contested possessions as well. So because he does love the physicality. He wants to be around bodies.
I put a tweet out yesterday as well. Fremantle deserve a lot of props. They got him as a rookie pick, and he's going to be a heck of a find as that pick. The reigning premiers, Brisbane, they got their title defence underway, their first win of the season. St Kilda, another loss for them. But really with St Kilda, the story was out of their VFL match where Lance Collard is being investigated for an alleged homophobic slur. Now, he served a punishment previously for a homophobic slur.
Yep.
It was 5 games on that occasion.
It was 6.
6, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is going to be a really difficult week for St Kilda to handle this with Lance Collard. And if he's done it, well, he deserves to have the book thrown at him.
I don't think there's any doubt that there'll be books, plural, thrown at him if the allegations are proved to be true. And it's going to challenge St Kilda. And Ross has been very strong through the years when players have transgressed, that we support the player, condemn the behaviour. Mm. They're going to have to support the player on the same reason, only a couple of years apart. It's double figures minimum.
Yeah,
is the penalty. If it's found the allegations are true, it's double figures, weeks minimum.
Yeah,
and it could possibly put his career in jeopardy. He's playing in the twos in the first place.
Yeah,
he's had trouble with this before. If it goes again, and he's found to be correct and all above board, or not certainly not above board, but correct and true.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, it might put his career in jeopardy at St Kilda.
Yeah. It's a sad state of affairs that this continues to happen, that week after week, year after year, we've seen this. I mean, you would have thought maybe by now, and St Kilda, who have been in the Pride match, we asked Ross Lyon after Lance Collard's first transgression about what education they did, and I'm not sure how clear the answer was as to what had taken place. So I'm sure those questions will be asked of St Kilda again this week, and I hope they have a good answer for it.
Yeah, but the education piece is interesting because the AFL and the PA and all that sort of stuff have been doing all these education sessions with clubs for years. I remember doing them back in my time.
Wow.
So this has been happening for years. Not necessarily the homophobia one. Maybe that started after me, but all these like drinking, drugs, whatever else it is, they've been happening for years. There's education sessions, the AFL keep telling us. The players have no excuses for the transgressions, which leads me to believe that it's not about the education. It's about the human, the person, the personality, the background, the upbringing. So there's so many layers to this. It's not just about the footy club and what they have. Why haven't you been able to change this? I don't think it's that simple.
Yeah.
When we really break it down, I don't think it's that simple. So you can have as much education as you like, but if you're wired a certain way, if you're built a certain way, you could be educated to the cows come home and still not change the way you behave.
Let's move on from that and wrap it up with your half serious.
I tell you what.
What have you got for us?
I came in here today at the MCG. I was really excited. I knew we were going to have a great contest. Didn't know we were going to get to what we did, but we knew we were going to get a great contest. And it was a beautiful day, 21 degrees in Melbourne. Crowds were lining up. It was brilliant. I thought, this is going to be a great day. A lot of colour out there, a lot of excitement, a lot of buzz in the concourse at the MCG. And we had to line up to get in, which is fine at the MCG. No worries, big crowds, big stadium. I just reckon we've got to find a better way to get people into the venues. I've been watching this from afar for a little while, particularly the big ones with external concourses. I think we've got a problem. We had long queues of people with patrons trying to get through the middle of us at times, mobility scooters coming through, wheelchairs coming through, and we're not having crack at anyone. But I just reckon there's a better way to get people into the stadium.
It's like a bit of a crisscross, isn't it?
It's a shambles.
People are coming in this way, and people are walking the concourse the other way, and it's just a kind of
people get a bit jacked if someone coming in front, even though it's a bit, oh, thanks very much. Sometimes there's nothing, and you want to... the old bloke who doesn't give you the wave in the car.
Let them in. Always give the wave.
You've got to give the wave.
Yep.
So I reckon there's a way, there has to be a way, and there's a smarter people than I to do this, not my job anyway, to get crowds more effectively into the MCG. I think we can do that. We're a stadium, a world-class stadium with a world-class facility and world-class staff. I think there's a way, and I haven't got the answer, but I want someone to come up with a way to effectively manage the traffic on the concourse so people can enter the MCG more efficiently, more safely. I know we've got the barriers now, we've got the wands and the metal gates and all that sort of stuff. But we had one bloke today holding up the crowd so someone could go through a backpack. It took 3.5 minutes to go through the backpack. No one else is coming through and the other line's travelling through. I just reckon there's a better way, and I'm only half serious about it too.
I like it. Good note to finish on. I get irrationally mad when people don't give me the wave when I let them.
Oh, don't start me on the wave.
That is it for ABC AFL Daily. 5 drops a week wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends. Tell the people you don't like. We always say it. This has been ABC AFL Daily.